This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Representative Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the middle. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle, a weekly debate over politics, policy, and current issues facing the state of Utah. Today we will discuss whether John Huntsman will seek presidential office again. We'll talk about a new national monument in Utah. Could that happen? Minimum wage increases? Is that good for Utah? And of course, Senator Lee will get a shout out. First, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the political left is my friend Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political right, my other good friend, Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie.
This morning, we're going to talk about our former governor, John Huntsman. Two big pieces of news this week. He's basically saying he's willing to consider another run for president. That's big news for Utahns. And then he also had a New York Times editorial encouraging the GOP to get serious about climate change. This feels like some more maneuvering of our former chief executive officer to keep relevant, keep his name out there. Jim, what do you make of it?
Relevant? Look, I am telling you from people who know people in the White House, including the President of the United States directly to me. I mean, okay, it was 28 seconds, but I was in a reception line.
How many times has he told this story, Greg?
I know.
Here's the point.
He was bragging.
He was talking about John Huntsman. John Huntsman would have beat Barack Obama last time. It's that simple. And if the Republicans can gulp down a reasonable person as president and get rid of the wild people in their dark meat cages, John Huntsman could win the presidency. If they can't, they're doomed to oblivion as far as the presidency is concerned for a long, long, long time. Bring on the Rand Pauls, you know?
I wonder how Barack Obama feels about, you know, this Democrat in Utah saying that he would have been beat by our governor, Greg?
Well, this is the same governor who oversaw $400 million in tax cuts and tax reform, making Utah's income tax a flatter, fairer tax, signed school choice. And signed vouchers into law as our governor, campaigned on it as well. This sounds like a conservative governor to me. And if Jim is conceding that a conservative candidate could beat a liberal Democrat, I would applaud such observations.
Greg, doesn't he have a point, though, that the Republican Party's got some issues? I mean, you've got millennials not embracing it. You got Hispanics running from it. You've got an extreme part of the party taking it over, and John Huntsman tries to represent that part. Maybe it's the mainstream middle part that seems to be losing its voice in the Republican Party.
You know what? I think it's all about narrative. I don't even think it's about, you know, what we call right wing and extreme. I mean, a lot of people want to remember our President Ronald Reagan. He was certainly conservative, was able to connect with people, the great communicator. They were Reagan Democrats, and I don't find him to be a moderate in approach. I think it's the way we communicate our messages, and I think that in a 24/7 news cycle, strident and you know, hyperbole seem to rule the day. And I think it's not so much even our parties or our philosophies. It's just pop culture and the way we cover news nowadays. It has to be extreme. It has to catch people's attention because it never ends.
Jim, he used the word narrative, which is kind of like the word aspirational. We use it in politics.
I don't use it because I got to look it up first. Look, it's not aspirational or whatever the other big word you used.
It's a narrative, Jim. The narrative has to be right.
It's not a narrative. It's are you going to nominate a nutcase like
that's a narrative, nutcase, pejorative.
Or Rick Perry or one of those complete guys. Bring him on, Rand Paul. I couldn't be more for bringing him on because Hillary, we'll barely have to have an election. The question is, are Republicans going to be able to look in the mirror and have somebody that can get elected, or are they going to have those juices of red meat flowing and get that thrill? Narrative or not, that's the choice.
I'll go on record right now that the narrative I want to see representing the political center is Jeb Bush jumping in the ring.
My fear with Jeb Bush is that it's just the Bush family name. I mean, there's a fatigue there. I mean, if it were a Democrat name, if it were Kennedy,
you don't think,
you know,
there's
the
a
media
Clinton
would help
fatigue?
Perpetuate the name Kennedy for another 200 years. But with the name Bush, The media will sour the American people on that family very quickly.
Who's your guy, the Greg or gal?
You know what? I like Marco Rubio. I like a guy that I think he's a comes from an immigrant family. He's a pull yourself up by the bootstrap kind of guy. He was a Speaker of the House of Florida, one of our major states in terms of size and economic strength. At a very early age, he was Speaker. I like him. I think he's a guy that could really communicate. When you talk about communicating our positions, I think Senator Rubio would do a fantastic job.
Jim, close this out for us in terms of Hillary, Huntsman, Bush. What are you?
You know, I don't like Hillary right now. I mean, I would support her. She'd be great. She's too conservative. We really need the good senator from Massachusetts. I like the governor of Delaware.
A former
Teddy
candidate?
Kennedy. He's not
alive
anymore.
Maybe he's thinking of Mitt Romney.
That's
you know,
senator
candidate
from Massachusetts is long gone there, Jim. He's not around anymore. May he rest in peace.
I know
who you're talking about. But I, in other words, who? Who?
Yeah.
Who?
That's right. So our problem as Democrats are going to be to get Hillary out of that trifocal thing that she and Bill had where she is just way, way, way too conservative. Their instincts are Arkansas kind of conservative there, and that's what I'm worried about.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined on the left by Jim DeBacchus and on the right by Greg Hughes. We got word this week, a Politico story, about party affiliation of reporters. And that you're going to say no surprise here, Greg. But so 7% identified as Republican. 7. 50% independent, 28% Democrat, and then a whole bunch that wouldn't, you know, disclose. The interesting part of the study was that in 2002, 18% reported Republican. Today, 7%.
All that poll tells me, Natalie, is that reporters are being a little more honest today than they were before. There was never 18% of this media that were Republican or affiliated that way. That was never true. 1992, I had a bumper sticker on my car that said, "Annoy the media, reelect Bush." Okay, mm-hmm. It's always been this way. Look, to be a reporter, you kind of feel like the outsider anyway. You're kind of this guy that's going to go out there, a guy or gal, and report the truth, get down to and it's never, you know, Republicans, fair or not, reporters look at them as the establishment. Even when the Democrats are the establishment, it's these fat cat Republicans, and there's just something innate. They just could never affiliate with Republicans. It's confused, but it seems to be the way of the world.
It's not innate. It's that they're educated people. That's what the problem
is. Oh, my. That
you
was
can't
a
find. Let me tell you something.
Whoa.
Woodward and Bernstein, you know, if they applied the same practice and the same kind of investigative journalism to Benghazi that they did Watergate, you would have a whole different story happening in this country today. But you don't, because there is some. It's just.
You're comparing
it's your
Benghazi
same
to Watergate.
Well, actually, Benghazi's more serious. I mean, people died there. I mean, I will tell you
We have our Congressman Chaffetz taking a pretty lead role there.
I think it is, you know, I've just heard the doublespeak so much there. You have one of the chief communication guys from the White House saying on national television in one of the talking shows on Sunday morning, "Dude, it was like 2 years ago." That was his, like, he said that out loud.
Wow.
"Dude, it was like
four dead Americans
2 years ago." Yeah.
And he's saying that.
You know, it goes to the core of what is wrong with the Republican Party. There are so many serious issues in front of us. Look, 4 people died. It's not somebody's fault. The president didn't sit down, like I'm hearing on Fox, and plan to have those people die because he's from Nigeria and whatever. They died. Thanks to Congressman Chaffetz, we didn't give the money to our embassies for the security protection they wanted, and Jason voted against that and against that and against that. Then the security is not there. The ambassador is off on his own where he shouldn't be. He gets killed. We go through humiliation. But to say somehow that the president is responsible for that is to ignore reality.
I know we're coming up on a break. In a re-election year, they took the talking points, tried to point to a YouTube video that had nothing to do with a true terrorist attack that was occurring for fear that it would hurt the president's approval ratings and show that he wasn't a strong leader. They did it for, I think, political purposes, and I think it'll come out eventually. But it's too bad that we don't have journalists who can smell this for what it is and give it the kind of aggressiveness that we've seen in the past.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the possibility of another national monument in Utah. Join the conversation next.
This is Jim DeBacchus in the center, as usual.
This is Hughes, and I'm never going to be on the left.
And I'm Natalie Gochner, and I'm on the political right.
There you go.
This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Hey, we have being debated in Washington right now, again, a minimum wage. I think we had over 40-some-odd senators filibuster this week. And, you know, the talking point, if you will, from Washington is they want to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. And these senators make $211 an hour. And there was something that just didn't feel right about it. I'll have something to say at the end of this conversation as an economist, but Jim, we'll turn it over to you to rant a little bit.
Look, there's 170 or 80,000 people in our state, minus the teenagers, that are there living on $7.25 an hour. They are trying, most of them, I don't know the facts on this, but I would hazard a guess that most of them are single mothers. They're out changing sheets. They're out working. And $7.25, a raise up to $10.10, would not have this giant effect on the macro economy. It simply is almost undetectable. And in the states that have, like Massachusetts, that have considerably higher minimum wages, their economies are booming. It's a red herring. We need to take the lowest of the low who are doing everything they can to put food on the table of their families, and we need to get that minimum wage to at least $10.10 and make it a playing ground that provides people who are working hard to begin to have the ability to come close to supporting their families. And what killed me, one other quick thing, Mike Lee, the hypocrisy of Mike Lee, who lost his house because he couldn't make his house payment and then had lobbyists come rolling in and save him to vote against this $10.10 for these many tens of thousands of Utahns. Mike, you of all people ought to know what it's like to have that feeling in the pit of your stomach when there's not enough money to pay. But all of those poor Utahns don't have lobbyist friends to go to bail them out the way you had, Senator. And you have the audacity to vote against this help by saying people ought to pull themselves up from their bootstrings. Well, you have those lobbyist strings to pull you up, but that's not true with a lot of working families in Utah. 10-10 is where we ought to be.
Greg, we need to give you some time.
Let me tell you, this is the problem with politicians. That we think that if we draw pretty numbers at the bottom of a spreadsheet, then everything else acts accordingly. If I want money to arrive for education, I'll just put a higher number on that bottom line, and everyone else will just react accordingly. Here's the problem. We know as appropriators of the state in the state legislature that it is this economy, or it is the risk takers, the small business owners who hire people, who move this economy, who send their tax dollars to the state to then spend. That is a supply side. That's how this works. And we can put any artificial number you want. Why stop at $10? I don't know what logic you've stopped, Jim, at $10 that 20 wouldn't do a better job. Make it $50 an hour, because if the argument is it will never touch the economy, it will never hurt the small businessman, just make that number $100 an hour then, because I'm sure people could live better on $100 an hour than any number lower than that. That argument about that number having to go up, that politicians assign it, that the economy reacts to it, it has got this thing completely reversed. If we want to see people working, we want to see people productive, like Utah does, one of the lowest unemployment rates, certainly in the Western United States, if not the whole country, it's because you know that we've got to decrease the barriers to entry. We got to make sure that we're not becoming an enemy to the productivity of businesses. Let these things work, because they will. Nobody that has a successful business is going to starve their employees at $7 an hour, hoping that they never notice. You have to have work conditions that are acceptable, or you're not going to have an employment base. You need competent employees. These things, business in general, can work these things out and do it right and do right by their employees.
We've got a clear distinction between the left and the right on this issue. You know, my training is in economics, and I will tell you that the minimum wage is one of those issues that the theory's clear on, but the practice gives a mixed performance. So that's another way of saying that some economists think that you can raise the minimum wage a bit and not hurt the economy, and some think it'll hurt, and it's just a big disagreement. I will say, though, that since I represent the political center, I think the common ground is that, you know, there is a better way to help these people, and it's to help improve their skills.
There you go. I would concur.
You know, where the market actually rewards them for increasing their skills, and this would say let's get more pre-K, pre-kindergarten kind of education, so that people are learning and reading and on track as they go through the school system. It would argue for an earned income tax credit. Jim, how do you react to that?
I'm fine with those things.
I thought you might be.
The legislature ought to get off its very chintzy posterior and actually do something about preschool education. I mean, you're absolutely right.
We could
solve so many problems with $200 million extra.
I wouldn't mind
preschool.
A grand compromise here that raises the minimum wage a little bit, but also gets some money to help these people have better skills. I love it. Political center.
I'll let it go at that.
All right. Hey, national monument. So, you know, what are we? We're about at midterm elections. Means there's just over 2 years left in President Obama's time. We're a state that's been a victim of the Antiquities Act in the past.
Victim?
That is
the left would like to object to that term.
That is to say that presidents will use the power of their pen to take large tracts of land and create national monuments, and the Grand Staircase Escalante is the best example of that. Are we going to see another one, Jim?
You know, there's an interesting dynamic here, and I'll try to be commentator for a second here before I throw an opinion in. You see this incredibly interesting battle going on between the Representative Ivory brand of the Republican Party that are full speed ahead, no negotiation, stand our ground, sue them, to hell with the Intent Act of the Enabling Act that Utah signed to become a state, full speed ahead, we can win. We want the full 64-65% of all the federal land.
The only solution big enough.
That's all we're going to do, and we're not talking to those people. You've got kind of remarkably a moderate, and I am disdainful of putting this man in that thing because he's not, but Rob Bishop, who's actually rolling up his sleeves, been talking to county commissioners, is going around saying, look, we want the Uinta Basin. We ought to protect places, we ought to have a system, and we ought to get that working. Utah politicians or Republicans are scared to death. They can't figure out which side of the divide to go on because the delegates are primarily with Ivory. Their logic and their sense is primarily with Bishop. So what I'm going to propose this next week is what's called a White House petition. If 100,000 people sign a petition, then the White House has to react. So I'm going back to Washington, and we're going to have a petition which will urge the president to sit down with the Utah congressional delegation and in the next short time come up with a grand compromise. And then if there is no grand compromise, just start making national monument declarations all over the place and preserve Southern Utah.
You heard it here first, Greg.
First off, I'm unfamiliar with this policy where if there's a petition that you can get the White House to act. Has this been the problem for, 6 years that nobody's filed a petition to get the White House to act on anything?
Why haven't that happened on Obamacare?
Exactly. Well, come on. I mean, what is this, 100,000 signatures and the White House will react or act or something? I haven't seen anything coming out of there, but here's the deal. Let's just keep it to the golden rule. Treat me as I treat you. Let's just keep it. Let me find a Democrat state. Let's take 65% of the state. Let's put it under federal control. Let's take the tax base and the otherwise dollars that would have gone to public schools through your income tax or your property tax and everything else. Go take 65% of some blue state and give it zero revenue and then say with a straight face, I want more. I'd like more monuments from this state after you take 65% of it. I'm going to tell you that it's not ignoring the Enabling Act of Utah. It's looking at it and look at how other states with the same verbiage in their Enabling Act have a state that isn't all federally owned. 65%+ of the state is federal or federal lands. With a straight face, we have people that want even more than that. Go do that in some Democrat state and tell me how it feels.
Yeah.
You're not going to like it.
I got to tell you, I lived Grand Staircase. I know you guys both know this, but, you know, I helped with the PowerPoint presentation that the governor took in to the Oval Office to kind of make our case right at the last minute on this deal. And, you know, didn't get a chance to meet with the president, did meet with the chief of staff. And the chief of staff essentially told Governor Leavitt, I had knew nothing about this. This was planned by the campaign. What can I do to help? I can't change it, but what can I do to help? And then Mike Leavitt turned that into a negotiation for the largest land exchange in our state history and got something, at least something for our state out of it. But this Antiquities Act is dangerous stuff. It's not about saving the antiquities of our country. It's about political momentum for whoever's in office to get the green vote.
And aren't we just... Well, let me read the Enabling Act. Where do we get the audacity? Utah founders sat down with the federal government, and we made a deal with the feds. Section 2 says, and tell me, I know you're not a lawyer, Greg, but it sounds pretty good to me. The people of the proposed said state, which is Utah, it's only one line here, do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof. And then it goes on to clarify, but we signed that deal. That was the agreement. Whatever other states had done, that's our Enabling Act. That's the contract between the state of Utah and the federal government. The people of the inhabiting state, Utah, agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof.
Greg's point is we got a bad deal.
Well, no,
well,
actually,
well, we
what
did,
it is, but I don't
deal.
Have it in front of me, but I've seen side by side states with the same verbiage in their Enabling Act and what that state looks like today and how much of their lands are federally owned versus Utah. It hasn't been equally applied. It hasn't been done the same.
Interesting.
I don't have it in front of me, but it is the case.
This is the both sides of the aisle kind of legal brief.
Snoozer?
Yeah.
All right.
Listen,
all right.
Everyone's
here's
the point,
asleep.
We got news this week that Utahns have a high level of trust in their government. We have a higher level of trust than 47 other states. 75% of Utahns place a great deal or a fair amount of trust in our state government. You guys are elected officials. Congratulations.
Yeah. I don't like it one bit of it. I think this is a little bit too much of the LDS culture that isn't making the distinction between ecclesiastical leadership and the politics up on the Hill. I'm telling you, state of Utah, get up and sip the coffee, so to speak, or the postum or whatever, because this level of trust is greatly ill-advised. We ought to be up there as citizens. We ought to be holding up documents. We ought to be going to hearings,
Jim,
and we ought not to use the same kind of... I think it gets mixed up.
Don't you think this has something to do with the fact that we have a strong economy, that we have a rainy day fund with over $400 million in it, that we have a AAA bond rating, that we have a lot to be proud of in terms of our state leadership?
John Swallow?
I knew it was coming.
I mean,
it's occupational, you know, duty for Jim to point out what he doesn't like about a Republican state, being that he's a Democrat. I get that. But not all states are created equal. You have states right now that have budget shortfalls. Why? Because they were more, they had their appetites were bigger than what the taxpayer could feed. And so you have states, large states like Pennsylvania, other states with budget shortfalls. You have our state, our last legislative session had $250 million of tax surplus, more money that arrived than what we anticipated. That's not a giant recovery from a recession, but that is the slow
sure
climb.
Feels good.
But there's something to show for the governance here in the state of Utah, and I think that the citizens' support is earned.
Let's go to our gripes. Jim?
My gripe... Johnny OneNote, SaveTheTribune.com.
One of his other little sidekicks.
The Salt Lake Tribune is being gobbled up by the Deseret News in a very sleazy manner, and we ought to save it. Go to the website. It explains the details. SaveTheTribune.com.
Greg.
My gripe?
I think you should gripe about the fact that he blames the Deseret News for the Tribune's problems. Their owners are selling them out, not the Deseret News.
I just don't even know what newspapers are anymore. I think maybe my gripe ought to be, I'm going to change it on the fly here. My gripe is that people are crying about newspapers. Where are the candle makers? I'm sure they're still crying about the way they've been replaced so unceremoniously by electricity.
Film development.
You know, I mean, what in the world have we done with our newspapers? Why wouldn't we keep that walking museum of a conduit of information alive and well? I don't get it. I've missed the whole concept of newspapers.
My deal is you need to be pointing fingers at the hedge fund people that are taking the money and run. The Deseret News paid them money. They could invest it.
Wow.
Our gripe is just basically, Jim, you.
You. I know. I get that a lot.
I know. Well, I have a gripe about, we got reports this week about someone messing with a drone and wildlife in Zion's National Park, and there's just something.
Howard Stevenson?
There's just something unnerving about someone taking a drone and buzzing wildlife, and I just think we should have more respect for our animal brothers and sisters. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, a fun conversation. The program is produced by Tyler Ford, and we want to congratulate Tyler on his new baby son.
Congrats.
Felix.
Woo! Real men make men. Tyler, congrats.
Congratulations, Tyler. Thanks for listening.